Whoop whoop!
Nothing, Keith? I thought it was going. Uh-oh, breaking news. Who's got breaking news?
What's breaking news?
Yeah, what's breaking news?
Who probably hit the wrong button?
Or did he just hit the wrong button?
What else does that do? Y'all act like that ain't new.
You know, it's funny. Hearing Chris say, we got 2 weeks until basketball. We've got basically a week. We got 8 days until Major League Baseball. I know that we've had these dates circled. I know that they're getting closer. And I was optimistic, but a little bit nervous at the same time that something was going to happen, that we're going to have to pull the plug or postpone. It does feel like both the NBA and the major leagues, they're going to go on time as scheduled.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I got my eyes set on being in the stadium when the boys are back. You know, obviously, you know, it's going to be a weird environment watching the sport in such an empty space. But at the end of the day, just seeing them out there playing, whether it's an exhibition on Sunday or opening against the Giants, man, I just want to see Mookie. And I want to see how much Cody has gotten better, because his first couple of years in the league, he's just been like a rocket ship. Just pew, just took off. Mm-hmm. So I'm just excited, Travis, regardless of the opponent, the circumstances, just to see the guys back at it.
The interesting thing about being in the stadium, though, to me, if I could get in the stadium, I think I would enjoy being able to sit there and watch the game in peace. And because I've gone to college baseball, like when I was at USC, I used to go to all of our college baseball games at home. I'd go to, you know, if we had a Cal State Fullerton or we had some of these local schools, LMUs, I'd go, and it wasn't crowded at all. It was, you know, a handful of people at college baseball games. And then in Little League, we didn't have people in the stands, so you could get used to watching just the game and cheering for just your team without every, you know, another 30,000 people surrounded around you. So I wouldn't even have a problem with that. Hey, LZ, how I get credentials?
Well, there's only about 40 available spaces for media reporting on the game. So I guess basically you can't.
You're out. But you know what? Honestly, I don't think it's going to be a big deal. I think we'll get used to looking at these games with no fans really quickly. Because number one, I don't think we're going to see anybody in the stands for quite some time. I think that that's really down the road. I know that the owners are desperate to get people in there for all the obvious reasons. But that, I mean, what we know about the close contact like that, and especially shouting and yelling, that these are the things that prevent, or I should say that spread this virus a little more readily than some other things. But, watching the MLS, watching some of this other stuff, I know when we're on our morning call sometimes we've got the Korean baseball on the TV. It fades into the background really quickly, and it just becomes about, is this guy going to get a hit? Is this guy going to score a bucket? And keep in mind, guys, that's baseball, right? Basketball starts in 2 weeks, too, and the Lakers are right on the precipice of going on a championship run. It's been such a long time. It's not just, oh, it'll be nice to have it back. We're going to jump in right towards the end of the line, and the Lakers are going to be competing for a championship in about a month. It's crazy.
It is crazy, but it's a good thing. And when you look at it, because basketball season was 90% plus away from ending, I'm okay with the way that it's starting back up, where baseball season hadn't even started. So it's going to take a minute to kind of get going. Even in the spring training aspects of baseball, we got a chance to maybe catch a few innings that frontline guys were playing in. We would turn to it and look at it and be like, oh, okay, he only played two-thirds in an inning. Okay, all right. We didn't even get a chance to see that. But we get a chance to see the regular season now, which probably at the beginning is going to probably feel like a spring training to us until it really gets cooking and gets going. And that would probably be 10, 15 games into it.
Yeah, so those are going to go. The interesting one is the football, right? Because that seemed like the surest bet to go, and now maybe it's the least likely to go just because of the nature of the sport, which means we might have to wait to see Cam Newton in Boston, in New England. He went on a YouTube show with Odell and was talking about his attitude going into it, Key. And this is, if you're a Patriots fan, this is exactly what you're looking for. You're getting a dog. You're getting one of these ticked off dogs too. And I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm like, who are we playing? The team that passed on me, okay, that team passed on me. They could have came and got me. Cam Newton, with his skill set, healthy and pissed off, good luck dealing with that guy. That guy's going to be a monster in Boston.
I'm betting on Cam Newton, right? If there's a Vegas bet to bet on what type of year Cam Newton's going to have, I'm taking it. And because I think when you back a dog up against the in the corner, he's going to come out biting. Everybody was knocking him, hating on him. People like Raj just sitting around bashing. Oh, he ain't played well since 2015. He ain't getting 8 interceptions. And all the unnecessary chatter to try to set this narrative about who he is as a person as well as a player. They want to erase the start of the 2018 season and just focus in on missing the 2019 season. All of those sort of things, as a player, you hear that. And you pay attention to that. Because you know your body better than anybody, better than the doctors. You know when you inform. You know when players come back and they old or they rusty and they tired and they can't play anymore. They knew that anyway. They just wanted to give it a shot to get to the money. This ain't the case with him. He's not broken. His spirits aren't broken. You know, he's not playing for one last paycheck. That's not the situation here. He's playing to prove that he belongs amongst the elite quarterbacks of the National Football League, given his style. Damn the pocket passer. I'm going to do it the way I have always done it, and I've won on every single level, and I'm going to do it again. This time I'm going to do it in New England, but I'm going to do it different than what y'all are used to seeing. You used to seeing a guy walk up there to the podium at the end of winning a game with a nice Hugo Boss or a Tom Ford suit on. And standing
Tom
there
Ford.
Going, no, I ain't doing that. I'm walking up there with my hair the way it is, my clothes the way they are, and you going to accept it because I'm going to be balling. And that is the way he's supposed to be.
Listen, y'all know I love Cam. I do. And I think that what he brings to the game, both on and off the field, is necessary and is needed. And I so wanted him to be a Charger, and you guys know this. I was jumping up and down. You would have thought I owned the team the way I wanted him to be a Charger because I just wanted to be and see him. But with all that being said, he's going to be a success because of where he's going. And ain't nobody in the last 20 years lined up behind center for that Bill Belichick man and looked bad. Nobody. Dudes you ain't never heard of line up behind center with a Bill Belichick team. And you're like, damn, man, they might be a franchise quarterback. So when you just know that that dude is going to that environment, I put it almost on par, almost. I want to make sure I say almost. Almost on par when you have someone who's great in and of himself, like in Kevin Durant, said, I'm going to go to Golden State. You knew it was a wrap because of what Golden State had already proven what it was and what you knew about that dude. And I don't think that KD and Cam are the same in terms of their impact on the sport. You know, KD is, you know, he might retire. He's probably going to retire as a top 10 player of all time. Cam's not going to be that. But he's a made man, and he's going into a situation where they know what to do with guys like that. He's going to excel.
There's one variable, though, that's very different between that. Because had KD gone to the Warriors and – Clay had left and Steph had left, and then he had to step into it. That's a different putt than what he had. He went and joined those guys. Cam Newton is going into a team. And I agree with you. What you're talking about is every guy that's thrown passes for that team, whether it's Jacoby Brissett or Jimmy Garoppolo or Matt Cassel or any of these guys, have looked fantastic.
Scott Zolak
filling in for Tom Brady. He's not filling in for Tom Brady. He's replacing Tom Brady. That's different. And the pressure that comes along with that is different. I'm not saying he's incapable of handling that pressure, but Keith, you were saying it a minute ago.
Travis. Cam Newton goes in front of the world with a silk scarf on his head and some fuzzy horseshoes. You think he don't know about pressure and eyeballs and all that stuff?
It's different, LZ. This is different. This is different than what does he have on his head.
He's welcoming.
You are
criticism.
Replacing the greatest quarterback of all time. This isn't criticism because he wears crazy clothes. This is criticism of we had the greatest ever, and now you're not meeting that standard.
I'm just saying the people who are going to be like, man, he ain't no Tom Brady, blah, 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 blah. Those are the exact same people clowning him by what he wears. That's a real statement, man. When you give zero, like a Westbrook doesn't give zero, like a Cam doesn't give, or Keyshawn Johnson. When you don't give zero, you truly don't give zero. And the pressure you may feel going into a situation like that, it's just handled differently by someone who has shown you repeatedly they give zero.
I understand what Travis is saying. It's a lot like Joe Montana giving way to Steve Young. It's almost like that, where Steve Young was replacing a living legend.
But Steve Young is different.
Hold on. He was replacing a living legend. So Steve Young had to get the monkey off his back by winning a Super Bowl because he was replacing Joe. If Cam Newton goes to New England and they go to the Super Bowl and they win the Super Bowl, there's nothing to be said. If Cam Newton goes to New England and they're 2-6 and he's having the worst season of his career, that's different. But if he goes there and he wins, ain't nothing to talk about. I'm not going to be here 20 years like Tom Brady to give you 20 years of greatness. But what I am here to do for the short period of time that I'm here is show you what I'm about. And that's how he wins. Can't worry about the Boston fan base talking about how I dress and if I'm a wild, angry man or whatever little coded language that they use up there. What was that word again?
Can he contain himself?
He can't worry about that coded language. You smile at
the
folks.
Well, even Cam said that he has to, you know, his first perception of it all was, how are they going to mesh together? That's the part to me that seems the easiest part. Play well. Cam Newton is a good football player.
Well, that was a conversation. But that was only a conversation he was having.
That's an easy mesh.
He was just having a conversation with Odell based on, wow, New England called me. I wonder how that's going to work out based on everything everybody keep trying to say about Belichick and the Patriot
way. But that's
way.
What I'm saying. That if he's worried about what people are saying about Bill Belichick, and he's
He's not necessarily. You're not worried about it. You're addressing it because it has come up, and because it's come up, and you're sitting down having a conversation. It's just like me and you. When you first took this job here, it's like, well, Susan, I ain't gonna work with that Keyshawn. What do you think? And it's, you know, it's like, well,
I said it quite like that.
And a couple of times, it's like, well, you know, honey, I saw him on the sideline screaming at that coach. What do you think? Well, I think we'll be fine. And then you come to work 3 or 4 days, you're like, yeah, what's up, Susan? You got that chicken ready? I mean, that's what happens. You transform from what you probably thought walking in the room, you know, like, oh, God, I got to be on eggshells. He just ran George Sedano out of the studio. I'm next. And then you realize, oh, okay, this is how he roll. I got to roll like that. That's it. It's not that deep.
That the meshing is the easy part for sure. All right, the NBA snitch hotline is getting used and getting used frequently. What does it mean for the rest of the bubble? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. I'm looking at Myles Garrett on TV right here. They're showing him clubbing Mason Rudolph over the head with his helmet. Kind of worked out for him. I know he got suspended and had to go through some stuff, but he's going to pick up $125 million on the backside. That did not end the way that I thought it would.
Yeah, we should reenact that with me and you, Travis, and see if I can pick up 125. slug you over the head with a microphone or something.
Well, as long as we're in it together, you can hit me with the microphone as long as I get half of the 125 when we're done.
Yeah, he got the 125. Worked out for him the way it's supposed to. Now he's going to have some clauses in his contract, and, you know, there's going to be some.
If he hits somebody in the head, he loses $10 million or something like that?
Not necessarily hit him in the head, but do something, you know, conduct detrimental to the team. I'm sure there's going to be some out clauses and violations in there that people will speak to and want to talk about. And at the end of the day, he deserves it as a football player. When he's on the field, he certainly is a difference maker on the defensive side of the ball for the Browns. And so his time was now. And so guess what? He gets paid more than Khalil Mack.
See, yeah, I mean, works? Next man up, I guess, unless you're Dak Prescott, and then you don't.
That's how it works, man. Yeah. Next man up.
Not if you're Dak. It doesn't work like that. By the way,
no, actually, it did work like that. But I don't know what happened.
Less than 4 hours to go for Dak. The NBA are ratting each other out. The players are filling up the snitch line in the NBA bubble. Remember that they put that thing together so people could raise concerns, shall we say, if people were violating the bubble or other things. And apparently it is getting used often. And at least I'm not surprised it's getting used. I'm surprised it's getting used right out of the gate. That's the part that's surprising to me, that after less than a week in the bubble, people are already dropping dimes on each other.
Yeah, you know, are they really dropping dimes on each other, or they just hate? Like, what's the what's the real premise behind the whole situation? Is it these dudes got some Instagram models trying to come through and other dudes is hating on them, or are they genuinely worried about their health? That's my concern. Man, what's your mother in the background talking about?
You don't do it. You don't know. Hush up, boy. We don't know. We don't know what the motivation is. What we
give him some sugar, baby.
What we do know is that it's going to provide us with lots of opportunities to clown these guys and have fun. You got Austin Rivers. He out there snitching on LeBron James in the side of his like, it's just, it's fun. And this is where, you know, I think it's important that people who understand the culture of ball, and I don't mean the culture of black people, you know, in particular, or the culture of millennials or anything. I mean the culture of ball. Clowning each other is one of the most essential elements of it. And I talked about it way back when they were having the horse contest, and that's about the importance of having somebody who is willing to clown the guys as they were getting ready to shoot. Clowning each other, calling each other out, trying to show each other up, those are all essential elements to the culture of ball, or at least the ball I grew up playing, that people impart in me, you know, out in the streets in Detroit, you know, old brothers, you know, wearing dress shoes and dress socks, dropping 50 on you on a basketball court and clowning you the whole way, trying to raise you up and what it means to ball. And when I look at what's happening so far, whether it's the snitch hotline or the food or Austin Rivers, you know, letting people know how Bron is living, that's all part of the culture of ball. And it's important that people in media know this isn't about, you know, complaining, or this isn't necessarily about, you know, trying to talk about how difficult it is for them or ratting other guys out. This is just what the culture is. And it's important. And to me, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
If that's what it is, sure. If the hotline is filled with guys calling and saying, hey, you know, I saw LeBron upstairs, down Travis. Clean pool Travis. Without his mask on, that's one thing. But if it's, hey, you know, I saw two guys come in with two people that aren't supposed to be in here, that's not goofing around. That's trying to make sure you don't get a disease.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Well.
That is true.
Keyshawn.
Yeah, they better make sure that they ain't going to get the disease before they even decide to bring them in. They should already know about that.
But what are they going to do, the swab before they bring him inside the bubble?
Well, I'm gonna need a copy of your test. I'm gonna need to see the results, because when you get the Rona test, they give you the results. I'm gonna need to see a recent copy of that. The date's going to have to be legible, and then you get to go to the quarantine part, and then you could be inserted with the other elements of, let's say, prosperity, if you will.
That's what it's going to be, though, right? It's going to be like, because the novelty of ratting on each other in a playful way, that'll go away after a while, right? It's like, I like Clinton's example. This is the first couple of days at camp where you go over there and you look at your dorm and I look at mine and we all, oh, you got this and we got that and yours is a little better than mine and mine's a little better than yours. But eventually it's going to be much more practical and guys are going to be talking about, hey, look, I don't want to get sick. Let's make sure that that guy over there isn't bringing something in.
Yeah, and so, look, if there's going to be guys – out of 700 or so players and people and faculty and staff and everything, there's going to be a handful of people that's going to dime some guys out for whatever the reasons are, whether it's bringing girls into the bubble, whether it's a guy stepping outside the bubble to pick up a pack of weed, whatever it may be. Whether it's, I just don't like you. I don't even like your cologne on the elevator, so I'm just going to make your life miserable right now. It's going to be those type of dudes. It's going, because I remember when you threatened me when on the court during the regular season. So now I got a chance to be a sucker and just dial up and say something about you.
It's Why did everybody that. Immediately assume that Chris Paul was the guy? That NBA Twitter was saying that Chris Paul was the informant in the whole thing. Does he just send out that vibe to everybody? Is that what's going on?
That is wild that he is the one that everyone keeps pointing to. But I will say there are plenty of memes of him on the telephone, and so it makes for good humor. But so I'm here for it. I'm here for it. And look, man, I don't think Chris Paul is the one with the binoculars looking outside his window, just scoping things out, making sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And we don't but, and we don't know who, you know, we don't know Chris Paul like that. Maybe Chris Paul had an incident or two once upon a time on one of the teams, and he said something about somebody, and it got back, and now everybody's just labeling. Because what happens in the leagues is once something happens, it like a brush fire. It spreads. Oh, man, I can't deal with him, man. He be telling on people, man. He, guess what he did? You know, like I said, I've been on a team where there was a guy who's going to go to the staff and talk about what was taking place because he couldn't be a part of it. And he told. And everybody around the league know he told because it spread.
The funny part about Paul, though.
It's like, oh, no, man, we can't even talk around him. Shh, don't say nothing.
Is that when we all heard it, we all kind of went, yeah, it kind of fits. You know, there was a – wait, you know, Chris Paul really – like, if you would have heard that about – LeBron James or Anthony Davis, you'd be like, come on, man. What the? No, stop. But with Chris Paul, it's all like, huh, okay. Yeah, I can see it. What is he putting out there? What is Chris Paul putting out in the universe that made all of us go, yeah, I know that they're kidding, but I kind of see why they picked him?
Well, I think you start with head of the union. You start there. Then Austin Rivers' situation in the Clippers. Then a little scrap with Rondo. Then, I mean, you start putting pieces together, you know, and you start saying, well, this kind of maybe fits him. You start profiling him. You know, like I told you before, you look at haircuts, the way they walk, who they around, what type of clothes they wear, how they live their lifestyle, how they live in their life. And then people try to put that in a box. And that's what's probably happened with Chris Paul. And maybe along the way somewhere, he didn't necessarily snitch on anybody, but maybe he said something along the lines of, you know, I don't know why they paying him because he can't play. And it just resonated throughout the league that made people feel like within the league, oh, yeah, that's him.
All right. The manager of the Dodgers, Dave Roberts, is going to join us next. We'll ask him how Walker Buehler is getting ready for the start of that season. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Dave Roberts expected to join us coming up here in a little bit. And I'm excited to hear what he says about Walker Buehler, guys, because he was saying yesterday that he's a little bit behind. That's kind of a tricky situation to make sure that you get him up to speed, but you don't have nearly enough time to do it. That's two opposite things. You want to be cautious, but you don't have time to be cautious.
Yeah, listen, this is going to be the most challenging job perhaps since he's become skipper for the Dodgers. I believe in him. I'm excited to see what he does. And I'm also equally excited, guys, to win a championship and celebrate that.
Absolutely. And as promised, here he is, the manager of the Dodgers, Dave Roberts, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning, Dave. Welcome back. Thanks for coming on.
Fellas, what's going on? Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to kind of reconnect with you guys and get this baseball season going too.
Yeah, Skipper, before we get the baseball season going, though, having been a player in the major leagues for a long time and a big-time manager in the major leagues, how much snitching goes on in the clubhouse? Because, you know, we got some snitching going on in the NBA bubble right now.
Hey, Key, there's no snitching that goes on. That doesn't fly in the clubhouse.
Okay.
Tell that to old dude who's in Oakland who's snitching the Houston Astros.
Uh-oh.
That's fair. Hey, but you know what it is? It's like, but when you're a part of a clubhouse or a team, that stays in-house, but that's a different situation. He was no longer with that club and felt he had no allegiance to them.
Yeah, and see, and that's the same way I've been explaining to the guys. Like, players within your own team, you ain't going to really say something. But if it's somebody outside and I'm not getting the same things that you're getting, see, when I'm benefiting like the guy from the A's, right, I benefited from that championship run in Houston. So I'm okay until I leave. So it's kind of that's kind of the situation I feel like it is in the bubble, where they're not really snitching on the virus. They're snitching on other things that they can't necessarily get to that the other players are going to get to potentially.
Got it. Oh, believe me, I know what
you got it now, right? You took it you a minute, but you got it.
You framed it perfectly.
Yes.
Dave, take me through the balance between trying to get a guy like Walker Buehler ready for the season. We know he's a little bit behind in his throwing regimen right now, and knowing at the same time that you only got 60 games and that every game means so much more than it might during a regular season. How do you balance those two things?
Well, I think number one is health. You know, I think that obviously we all play to win and everyone competes, and Walker's certainly in that category. As a super competitor, but health is number one. So I think that regardless of, you know, would I love to have him built up to 90 pitches to go 6-7 innings, his first start? Absolutely. But that's just not going to happen. So I think that how we can build him up, and then you just got to trust other guys behind him and hopefully get Walker built up as soon as possible. But you got to be responsible because you can't get the player hurt.
How difficult is it going to be managing the emotions of guys in a space that is as easy to hear as an empty stadium? Because I'm curious if guys are going to be able to just express themselves, and if you're going to be able to share things as freely now that you don't have crowd noise to give you some cover.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think it's going to be a little bit kind of what the NBA has done, or the NFL has done, as far as the sideline, the microphones. There's certainly going to have to be a delay a little bit as far as, you know, there's going to be some reactions and things that probably aren't going to be family friendly. But I do think that having mics on the field, you know, players, coaches mic'd up at various times, I think it's going to certainly add to the experience for the viewers. For the players with no fans, you know what? Actually, we're getting kind of used to it. It's different. You know, you hear things that you normally wouldn't hear. They're going to be piping in some music. But as far as, like, the fans that aren't there, it's crazy, LZ. It just seems a little normal right now. We've played, probably 10 inter-squad games, and guys are performing still. It's been good.
Dave, as you look at this season versus the other seasons that you've either been a manager in or a player, will this be, as a manager, the hardest season to manage for you, given the situation of 60 games and how you're going to have to change up from the traditional way of playing a long season in baseball?
Absolutely. I think that the baseball season, I mean, when you're planning on playing through October, it's 8 months, you know, 8.5 months from spring training on. So, but that grind, we're kind of conditioned for that. But, you know, when you have 3 months of quarantine, 3.5 months of quarantine, where you've got to try to stay connected to players and coaches and make sure their spirit isn't broken, keeping them ramped up, keeping them optimistic when you really don't have any certainty that we are going to have a baseball season, you know? And now going through the season and all the different protocols, we're getting tested every other day with the saliva test and the masks indoors, coaches wearing masks during games. You know, there's a lot of distractions and things that are not normal to the players. So to keep them on track to focus on really performing and also keeping themselves and family healthy, certainly it is a challenge and key, probably bigger than I've ever had. Yeah.
Dave Roberts joining us here on the morning show. Dave, take me through, like you just said, typically you have 8.5 months to go through a season in the normal ebbs and flows. And I know that managers like to stick with guys, especially veteran guys that maybe are off to a little bit of a slow start. What about that decision-making on changing your lineup a little bit or maybe taking a guy out of a lineup because of the compacted season? Do you have to have a quicker trigger finger on making a move like that because there just isn't that time?
Yeah. I think that there's the benchmark or the kind of the barometer is like 100 at-bats as far as position players. You give a guy 100 at-bats, start the season, see how it goes, and see if it's real or not, if he's kind of working through some things. But then right now, you know, you're playing, you know, 60 games, so you just don't have that runway. And so I love to, and I understand how hard the game is as far as on the position player side. I can't relate to it on the pitching side, but pitchers do go through stretches where they're in slumps as well. I always think that I can ride with the guy and stick it out, but certainly these circumstances just don't allow for that. So, yeah, there's going to be a little bit more, I guess, urgency, but I just try not to speak to it too much because our guys understand that it's a sprint now, and I just don't want to add anything more to their plate. But the reality is that, yeah, you just don't have that margin to ride with guys when they're really struggling for quite some time.
How do we handle Walker Buehler in that scenario, in that situation, given the fact that right now it's a training camp situation where he's a little behind because he hadn't thrown much, but we need him to kind of be in midseason form by the time he gets to a second start? How do we handle that?
Yeah, well, I think that's a really good question. And obviously we're talking about the regular season, but ultimately we're still trying to win 11 games in October. And so for us to do that, he's got to be a part of the equation. And so I think that, you know, piggybacking Walker with somebody who's built up, I think his first couple starts will make sense. So to be quite honest, if we have Walker for 3-4 innings, his first start, that will work, and then continue to ramp him up because ultimately – you know, he's going to make 10 to 12 starts in the regular season and, you know, a few more in the postseason. So that's we need those starts.
Skipper, you're really tasked with what I think is a very, very difficult job, which is try to win a championship, but also taking the time to make sure that you're grooming your next generation of superstars. Not the guys who are young and already made, like Cody Bellinger and Walker Buehler, but the guys like a Gavin Lux, for instance, or maybe like May. How do you manage that when you don't have a whole lot of games? And as you mentioned before, you don't have a long runway.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that, you know, Gavin is a guy that we expect he's a part of the present, part of the future. You know, in an ideal world, LZ, he's a guy that you just run him out there every single day. He's going to take his lumps, and he's going to learn on the run and continue to get better. But in this situation, and I don't know quite yet how it's going to play out, but I will say that we have a lot of people, whether it's Kike Hernandez, Chris Taylor, proven guys that, you know, are right-handed, and they need to play as well. So, you know, there's some tough lefties that you want a young player like Gavin to kind of get his feet wet against those guys and take his lumps, like I said. But in this situation, you know, there's no development. This is about winning baseball games. And when you're the Dodgers, it's about winning. So it's a different situation. I don't know how it's going to play out for Gavin specifically. For Dustin, yeah, he's a guy that we're still building his innings up. We see him as a major league starter. There's still some fine tuning. But, yeah, in a regular situation, yeah, you can run him out there for 25, 27 starts and, you know, learn and get better. But now this situation, you want to put him in the best position to help us with baseball games. And that's still to be determined, but both guys have bright futures.
Dave, do you have somebody in mind as your primary DH, or are you going to do kind of a matchup thing depending on who's on the mound on any given day?
It's a little bit of matchup. It's a little bit of get off your feet for the day. Abbreviated off day, and I think that in that category, I think JT's a guy that will fit that. I think there'll be a day where Muncie DH is. I think Jock with DH. I think Pollock could be a candidate to DH once in a while. So I think that we can mix it around. I just think that guys like Chris Taylor and Kike, they're so defensive that when they're in the lineup, I want them to play defense too.
Skipper, I know that you are a hip-hop fan. We've talked about it before, off-air and on-air. DMX is facing off against Snoop next week. Who do you have in a head-to-head battle, Snoop or DMX?
So I think that if you're going to go deep, I love DMX, but I got to go Snoop because the lyrics are just – you just can't get past his lyrics. So I think DMX, he's great, but I think you can't. Snoop's got it, hands down.
Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, joining us here on The Morning Show. Dave, always good to talk to you. I can't wait to see you guys on the field a week from tomorrow against the Giants. Good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
Also, Skipper, Friday is my last day with these guys on the show. So when I call you from New York, you know, and want you on my show, I'm gonna need you now.
Dave, your allegiance is to us first. You don't need to handle any traitors.
See, you know what's a little disturbing is he always finds himself back in New York, doesn't he? You know, he's a guy, but he always finds.
I didn't say I was going to be a Yankee fan. I'm just saying. You know.
All right. Well, hey, see you, man. Good luck to you, and all the best, man. You're going to kill it out there.
Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Dave. All right. There's some good stuff in there. I mean, with the Gavin Lux, the Walker Buehler. I mean, so many different things. You can tell all the guys you just listed off. It gives you all the options that the Dodgers have. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. Plus, Crosstalk is coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, Brian Kamenetsky filling in for George again today. And Brian, can you hear the enthusiasm in my voice?
I can. Well, you're an enthusiastic guy, naturally.
Well, yes,
and,
indeed.
I do appreciate it. I do appreciate the way you're sort of saying, like, hey, guys, it's Brian. He's here. Let's get excited about it.
No, we're excited, exactly. Obviously. We're real excited to talk to you again for the third day in a row. But
not to discount.
Thank you.
Hey,
thank
Travis,
you, Keyshawn.
What's the worst exit of a coach to a new team that you've ever heard? Meaning, he's taking a job with a team, but he's lying like Nick Saban did with the Miami Dolphins in Alabama.
Yeah, well, see, the Nick Saban one never really bothered me because what's he supposed to say? Yeah, I'm interviewing for another job. You can't do that. The one that I remember, I don't know if it was when he was leaving Arkansas. No, because they got fired from Arkansas. I believe it was when he was leaving Louisville when Bobby Petrino just kind of left a note on his desk and bounced. And never came back and never really went in front of any of his players. And he just left a note and left. That's at the top of my list.
Yeah, see, the one that stands out to me is Tuberville was with recruits, having a recruiting dinner, and had to take a phone call, slipped out the back door, never came back in to tell the assistant coaches or nothing. He bounced to the airport.
That's worse.
They was all sitting at the table eating. Or the coach at Colorado this past year who went to Michigan State was at a fundraiser raising funds for the program and taking phone calls, negotiating the Michigan State deal, talking about go see you. And then when he left, he got on the plane with his family and went to Michigan State.
These are the maker of men that you're referring to. They're the example that these young men are supposed to look to and emulate.
See?
Nice going.
And that's
nice
why,
going.
Brian, that's why I always maintain my honesty with the guys and letting them know there's nothing there. I don't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
And don't listen to the rumors. When I know, you will know. That's how you do it.
That's just simply not true at all. But we,
what do you mean?
We can keep it moving.
hey, Key, how much money have you raised for Michigan State during today's show?
All right, Brian, you ready to pick the winner?
This is my favorite. This is my favorite part. I love doing this. All right,
okay,
go ahead.
So today's topic was things that we're looking forward to doing once coronavirus is in the rearview mirror, okay? So assuming that we ever get to that point. So team number
one. Optimistic. All right.
Team number one is attend sporting events in person. No, dating, attending concerts, and going to the salon. That is team number one. Team number two is seeing your elderly loved ones, movies, parties, and eating the samples at Costco. That may be a giveaway.
Can that just be eating samples generally?
Yeah, sure. Wherever you want. And then lastly, go on a vacation, go inside a restaurant, attend Broadway plays, and go to the gym.
I believe it's Broadway shows.
Broadway shows. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
We don't want to limit ourselves just to the spoken word. I understand.
Exactly. This is going to be dance, people.
Gosh darn it. If I want to see Oklahoma, I want to be able to go see Oklahoma. Okay. So number one is out. And I'll tell you why. I'm married. I don't need to be dating. And has anybody ever seen a picture of me? What do I do in a salon? So that's out.
All right. So we're down to
two or four.
Well done.
I get to go see sporting events for free. So in person, that's my job. At least for now. Visit my elderly loved ones. I'm going with list number two. Elderly loved ones, movies, parties, and eating samples. I love free samples. It is my favorite thing in the world. My wife still
that
gives
is the grossest
a lot of grief.
Thing I've ever heard.
And you want to know? And you want to know why people spread coronavirus?
Well, just so you understand, Brian.
I want. What is that? Disgusting. What are you giving away over there? Oh, I'd like a bite of that. Absolutely.
There's a reason. There's a reason that they snatched all the buffets off of everything.
If it's free, I'll take three. And
people
it's free,
breathing
it's for
all
me.
Over it. Come yeah. on, man.
That's how it goes.
Well, virtual fist. Bump for you, Travis. That's right.
You guys are eating fish that's been sitting out for 3 hours.
I'm not eating fish off. No, we're not doing that. Stop.
I mean, come on.
Nobody eats the left out fish, but just take comfort, Brian, that your choice and my list are in dead last place. So we're in the minority in this one. We'll see you tomorrow morning on The Morning Show. BK in for George next. We'll see you then.